The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with the Reader's Digest and Inside the Top Doctor Racket. That sounds interesting, doesn't it? Got $99 lying around? You could be named a leading physician. Wow. My eyes narrowed when the woman in the voice message told me to call about my top doctor award. They needed to make sure everything was accurate before they sent my plaque, she said. It was a titillating irony. I don't have a medical degree, and I'm not a physician, but I am an investigative journalist who specializes in health care, so I returned the call. I spoke to a cheerful salesperson named Ann at a company called Top Doctor Awards. For some reason, she believed I was a physician, and even better, worthy of one of their awards. I asked how I had been selected. My peers had nominated me, said buoyantly, and my patients had reviewed me. I must be a leading physician, she said. That's why many patients looking for a good physician assume. They figure that such awards are backed by rigorous vetting and standards to ensure that only the best doctors are recognized. Hospitals and physicians lend credibility to the facade by hanging the awards in their offices and promoting them on their websites. But medicine is complex, and there's no simple way of determining that some doctors are better than others. It says if you work for a company called ProPublica, Ann said. I responded that I did, and that I was actually a journalist, not a doctor. Was that going to be a problem, or could they still give me the Top Doctor Award? There was a pause. Clearly, I had thrown a curve into her script. She regrouped quickly. Yes, she decided I could have the award. Ann's bonus, I thought, must be volume-based. Then we got down to business. The honor came with a customized plaque, with my choice of cherry wood with a gold trim or black with a chrome trim. I mulled over which five better fit my unique brand of medicine. There's a nominal fee for the recognition, she says, reverting to the stilted cadence of someone reading a script. It's a reduced rate, just $280. We accept Visa, MasterCard, and American Express. That sounded a little speedy to get past the ProPublica bean counter, as I hesitated. The plaque commemorates your achievements and, more importantly, communicates the achievements of your patients, she said, moving in close to close the sale. It's a great achievement. I would hate for you to miss it. Can I get it to you right now for $99? I accepted the offer, and that's how I became a top doctor. It beats years of hard work and drowning in debt from medical school, and it gives me just the right amount of heft when I dole out advice to snuffling colleagues in the newsroom. Go home before we all get sick. Obviously, the Top Doctor Awards company has questionable standards. I called up actual health care experts. Not surprisingly, they took a dim view of the awards business. Any competent doctor doesn't need one of those awards unless he wants to stroke his ego, says Michael Carome, M.D., of the advocacy organization Public Citizen. Of course, some for-profit doctor grading companies are more legitimate than others. John Connolly, co-founder of the company that puts out the Castle Connolly Top Doctor Awards, not to be confused with Top Doctor Awards, said his company depends on nominations by physicians to identify top doctors. The company has a research team, he said, that checks the license, board certification, education, and discipline history of each nominee. Connolly believes it would be very difficult to game the nominations, but gave me a verbal disclaimer. We don't claim they are the best, he said of the company's honorees. We say they are among the best, and the ones we have screened carefully. While doctors do not pay Castle Connolly to be named a top doctor, they can pay for an enhanced profile in its online listings. The company brings in additional revenue by teaming up with magazines to do promotional issues in different cities and regions. The top doctor issues typically the number one newsstand and advertising seller, Connolly says. You've seen the glossy photo spreads in magazines featuring the best plastic or orthopedic surgeons or other specialties. Those might be special advertising sections by the New York City-based Madison Media Corporation. All they're doing is piggybacking on the work of companies such as Castle Connolly. A doctor who gets one of those awards can buy an ad up to be listed in the publication, says John Rilsey, president of Madison Media. So how does Rilsey know the best doctors in his ad are actually the best? I guess in the worst world, it's hard to find the absolute best, he says. It's all through reputation and interpretation. John Santa, M.D., that's an interesting name, Santa, S-A-N-T-A. I wonder if he does Christmas stuff. Fairly snorts at that. He spent years measuring health care quality for Consumer Reports magazine. Anything that relies on nominations, he says, will be gained by doctors with financial ties to one another, partners who work in the same practice, doctors who refer patients to one another. If you look at these methodologies, they are rife with economic and relationship biases, Dr. Santa says. I decided to dig further into how Top Doctor awards targets his honorees, without pointing that I was one of them. Donna Martin, who works in client services, told me top doctors could be nominated by their peers because of their achievements. But there's also a full interview process that includes questions about education and awards. My ears perked up when she said a research team is also involved. But when I asked for more detail, Martin said she said the specifics are proprietary. Later, I called her again. How good could their methods be if I was one of the top doctors? She said she would look up my account and call me back. I'm still waiting. What about my fellow top doctors, the actual physicians who share my award? Did they understand the dubious honor they'd received? I called Louis Maharan, M.D., who practiced sports medicine in New York City. He said he wasn't surprised that top doctor awards wanted to honor him. I'm sort of in that echelon, he said. If you're finding people that don't deserve the award, then maybe you're onto something. I told Dr. Maharan that I am also a top doctor. That's pretty strong evidence that it's not legitimate, he said, changing his tone. It might have been that my assistant just sent in a check. Dr. Maharan said doctors are so busy that it's easy to take advantage of them. It's good to be included in the list of honored physicians, even if they are questionable, because it draws in patients, he said. But now that he knows my story, Dr. Maharan said he will ask how the doctors are chosen, and he might not pay the fee to renew his award. I decided not to take it personally. I smiled like a proud parent when my faux cherrywood and gold top doctor plaque arrived in the ProPublica newsroom. The salesperson had asked me what she could list on my specialty. The whole thing is so silly that I probably could have said neurosurgery, but I went with her the truth, so I went with investigations. Stuffing the ballot box. That's ballot, B-A-L-L-A-D. Rock the vote, or if you're middle-aged with a sentimental side, easy listen the vote. 2,000 degrees and counting. Half inferno, half cyclone. The car fire burned as hot as 2,700 degrees and packed winds that turned trucks into wayward missiles. Would anyone caught inside it survive? And there's a picture of a truck driving through the flames and a fireman standing right in front of it, looking down the road at it. Death blew east on a savage wind, driving flames over foothills and across river, spitting glowing embers and scrubbing the earth bare. It was coming for Don Andrews. The firestorm shook the ground and roared as loud as a passing train. The windows on Andrews' bulldozer shattered, flinging glass into his face. The blue-green shards were everywhere, on the floor, inside his helmet, in his skin and eyes. He was alone and blinded. I'm not going to survive this, he thought. Andrews, 60, wasn't supposed to be this close to the edge. He'd been hired that day, July 26, 2018, by the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, CAL FIRE, to work with two other bulldozer drivers to carve a thick ring of dirt around a subdivision of homes near the city of Redding. It was a fairly routine assignment. The containment lines were three dozer blades wide and designed to halt the advance of the wildfire, which was still miles away. What Andrews didn't know was that the car fire, to that point a rather ordinary California blaze, had spawned something monstrous, a fire tornado the likes of which the state had never seen. A freak of meteorology, it would annihilate everything in its path, uprooting trees and crumpling electrical towers. It was a vortex of air wrapped around a column of rising heat, flames licking its unseen walls. Andrews hunkered down. He gripped the dozer's protective foil curtain closed with his left hand to keep the wind from battering them. Open. With his right hand, he pulled the shirt over his nose and mouth. The heat seared his throat. Temperatures within the tornado soared to 2,700 degrees, and there's a picture here of this fire, and it's a horrible-looking fire. Side of a hill is just totally in flames with trees going up like torches. Andrews dialed 911. His singed hands trembled. A dispatcher answered on the verge of tears. Dozens of others had phoned in already, describing the unfolding hell. Now here was a call from Ground Zero. I don't know how long I can last, Andrew told her. I need to get out of here. If you can, get out safely, okay? I can't. It's all on fire around me. Don't ask anybody's life for mine. Don't risk anybody's life for mine. The wildfire had begun in a typical fashion. Human error colliding with a dry landscape primed to burn. It hadn't rained in the area since May, and winter precipitation had been 58% below that normal. More than a dozen other wildfires were already burning across the state. so resources to fight this one were stretched. On July 23rd, an older couple driving home from a vacation cut through Redding. A tire on their trailer went flat, leaving the wheel to drag on the pavement. Sparks flew into parched grass. The fire quickly spread. Incident Commander Tom Lucas, a 23-year veteran of CAL FIRE, and his colleagues set up a command center, called in more firefighters, and carved containment lines. But then the fire exploded from 4,599 acres to nearly 30,000. Just after noon, Lubas handed off his incident commander role and left base camp at the Shasta County Fairgrounds in Redding. Though he had worked in the morning, it was supposed to be his day off, and now he planned to shower and rest. From his truck window, Lubas watched as a 30,000-foot-tall convection column, a plume filled with ash debris and hydrocarbons, ballooned into the sky, sucking up the hot air as oxygen fed the fire. As he drove, his truck registered the temperature outside, 113 degrees. On the coast, 95 miles to the west, it was 59 degrees. As the cool coastal air blew over Bully Choop Mountain, that's C-H-O-O-P, interesting name, Bully Choop Mountain, and into the Sacramento Valley, the 54-degree difference caused warm air to shoot up in a vortex. As the day turned to dusk, the convection column would rotate faster and faster, contorting into a cyclone. Sometime after 5:30 p.m., as Lucas finished grocery shopping and the sky grew dark, the fire's behavior alarmed him, so he went back to work, driving in the hills northwest of Redding to assist in evacuating residents. But an hour later, he stopped. He was blocked. Ahead of him, the tornado twisted. It was sinister and snake-like, a swirl of orange that seemed to fill the entire sky. Flames soared 400 feet into the air. It wouldn't touch down for another hour, but it was rapidly gaining strength. The tornado would grow to 1,000 feet wide, the size of 3 football fields, and produce temperatures double those of a typical wildfire. Its howling obliterated every other sound. Tom Lubas was in shock. Nobody's going to believe this, he thought. The fire captain, Sean Raleigh, barked evacuations over the radio for the neighborhood of Sunset Terrace. The sky was red and the wind screamed, shaking the leaves off trees. New fires lit in shrubs and on roofs. A 24-year veteran of wildland blazes, Raleigh had seen nearly everything, including swirling eddies of air called fire whirls. But he hadn't seen anything like this. At around 7:15 p.m., he drove toward subdivisions tucked into the wooded hills. He figured residents would need help escaping. His headlights barely pierced the smoke, but he could see 3 bulldozers inch past him on the 2-lane Bonaventure Boulevard. One was driven by Don Andrews, who was unaware of the danger he was about to face. Contractor Terry Cummins and Jimmy Jones drove the other two. They were under electrical lines, which were swaying in the wind, and Raleigh ordered the men to move away. At the driveway of a sprawling house, Raleigh spotted a Tesla with someone in the driver's seat. Dr. Nanda Kuma, 62, had raced 5 miles home from Viber Hospital in Northern California. His wife, Yasoda Thiruvayappai, 58, and daughters Dr. Shumama, 29, hadn't received an evacuation alert, and when the power cut out, their garage door wouldn't open, locking their car inside. "Go back," Raleigh shouted to Dr. Kumar, sending his siren. "My wife or daughter are in there. Can they come in?" Dr. Kumar said, pointing to Raleigh's vehicle. He figured they'd be safest with the captain. "Come in my truck?" Raleigh asked. "Yes." And there's a picture of them. They're obviously an Indian or a Pakistani couple, and she's rather small, he's tall and slender, and their daughter is very attractive. The women jumped into the back of the seat, coughing. Nearby flames that climbed 100 feet devoured their neighbors' homes. Soon theirs would fall as well. "I'll lead you out," Raleigh yelled to Dr. Kumar. "Take your car." Debris belted the truck, cracking Raleigh's windshield and shattering the other windows as the wind blew the vehicle off the road. The captain threw himself across the passenger seat, shielding his face as the fire passed over them. Yasoda and Fushima screamed. "Are you okay?" Raleigh shouted. Though he knew the answer, he was embarrassed. He told this trapped family he could get them out safely. Now they were covered in glass and bleeding. Behind them, the trunk of Dr. Kumar's Tesla was aflame. "I need a water drop." The radio call from Redding Fire Inspector Jeremy L. Stoke couldn't have been more urgent. "Mayday!" This 37-year-old had cut short a family vacation with his wife and 2 children to come home and battle the car fire. As the tornado descended, he was driving his truck south on the Buenaventura Boulevard, the ferocity of the thing defied his long experience. "I need a water drop," Stroke called out at 7:30 p.m., hoping a firefighting plane could bail him out. "I'm getting burned over." As the engine captain responded immediately, asking for his location, there was no response. The tornado had picked up Stokes' 5,000-pound Ford F-150 truck as if it were a toy car, flipping it repeatedly and dragging it down Buenaventura Boulevard. The truck scraped the pavement, leaving a trail of red paint before coming to a rest in the woods. And there's a picture here of a gentleman named Ed Bledsoe. When the fire got to his door, he wasn't home, but some of the family was. He lost them all. The twister destroyed everything it touched, including an electrical tower, into a jumble of steel, lofting a shipping container and blasting the bark off oak trees. "Come get us, Grandpa." On Quartz Hill Road, 70-year-old Melody Bledsoe soaked blankets in her kitchen sink and draped them over her great-grandchildren. Emily and James Jr. Roberts were 4 and 5 years old. Melody's husband, Ed Bledsoe, was a handyman who'd gone just down the road to pick up a paycheck. The family hadn't been ordered to evacuate. They didn't know the tornado was headed their way until they got a desperate call from Junior while he was stuck in gridlock traffic. "Are you coming?" the boy asked, his small voice frantic. The storm was sucking air through the house, rattling the windows and ripping through the trees outside. "Don't worry, Grandpa is coming." "You got to come to the front door. The back door is on fire," Junior said. "I don't want you to get hurt." "That's where I'm coming. Be ready. I'll be there just as quick as I can. I'm waiting for the fire to pass." "Tell Grandpa I love him," Melody said in the background, her voice barely audible. "Everybody says they love you," Junior says. "Come get us, Grandpa. There's starting to be a lot of fire here." Then the call went silent. Don't make mistakes. Shortly before 8 p.m., as the blaze spotted around the bulldozer driver Terry Cummins in an open field near the Buenaventura Boulevard, the 44-year-old attacked the wildfire's base. Fire should have scared Cummins. The contractor grew up in the mountains in a logging and milling family. In 2005, his mother, sister, and brother died in a house fire, ignited by a candle, and soon after, he shut down the family business. He chased wildfires ever since. Now the field around him was a sea of rippling orange. The embers and flames seemed alive. He couldn't breathe from the smoke. He flagged down Andrews and Jones and led their dozers back to Buenaventura Boulevard. He figured they could wait between the steep banks on either side of the road. The air would be clear, and their engines could cool down. But as they drove north, the tornado descended again, the edges glowing red. It whipped rocks from Cummings' windshield like bullets, shattering the glass. It was dark as midnight. Then he picked up the front of his 25-ton bulldozer, pivoted it clockwise, and dropped it on the road on the hood of a nearby truck, which was crushed in a flame. The driver must be dead, Cummings thought. He reached for the fire shelter tucked behind his seat, but nabbed his gear bag by accident. He held in front of his face to protect his airways. White blisters bubbled on his fingertips. The skin felt like it was melting. "No, Lord," he screamed, "not like this." Now it seemed he was going to die the way his family had. The tornado sucked Cummings halfway out of the shattered window, his body drawn by a gravity he didn't understand. He gripped the window frame, jagged glass piercing his left leg as he pulled himself back inside. Reaching up, he tried to unfold the fire curtains over his dozer's open windows, but the third-degree burns on his finger prevented him from undoing the clasp. He grabbed a knife and cut them. Reaching his fire shelter, he pulled a cool cord as best he could. "Be calm. Don't make mistakes," he repeated to himself. Steve Bastilio sat cringing in the driver's seat of his truck, the one that sat mangled and flavored under Terry Cummings' dozer. A retired San Jose police officer, Bastillo's 55, hadn't evacuated in time because he didn't know he needed to. The fire had moved that quickly. As he drove out of his gated neighborhood just after 8 p.m., he called his wife, who was receiving treatment in the Bay Area for endometrial and lung cancer, both stage 4. "It might be over," he told her. "The fire is here." Now he was in grave trouble. The fire spreading in his pickup fed off all the spilled diesel, torching paperwork, jewelry, and guns in the back seat. Bastillo's hair looked like someone had taken a blowtorch to it. He knew he couldn't stay feet. So he climbed outside, grabbing a suitcase filled with clothing, and made a desperate move, crouching in the blade of Cummings' bulldozer, which provided some protection from the wind. He held the luggage in front of him. 15 seconds passed, or possibly 15 minutes. He wasn't sure. Embers floated through the air as the wind shifted. Fire danced through the grass and in the trees. Then the temperature dropped, perhaps by as much as 50 degrees. Bastillo's now saw Cummings sprinting down the street under his semi-deployed fire shelter. "Get me out of here," Cummings yelled at a man driving a Cal Fire truck, his voice cracking. "I'm burned really bad." Bastillo's hopped around into a second truck. Then he saw the driver's face. He knew that expression from decades in law enforcement. The look when someone wearing a uniform, which meant they were supposed to keep people safe, knew that it might not be possible. Where's Dawn? The tornado had blasted across fields, leveled neighborhoods, and rendered the landscape smooth and alien. Two and a half hours after forming, it was finally dissipating. Down the hill, Commander Tom Lubis watched his people stream out of the hillside neighborhoods, their stares vacant, like those of soldiers returning from battle. Lubis helped spray down the back of Dr. Kuma's Tesla, which was still flaming. The family had survived, and Lubis now directed their savior, Captain Rowley, to set up a triage area for burn victims. Lubis ordered 5 ambulances that left to continue evacuating more residents. "Where's Dawn?" Andrew's colleague Mike Merrick kept asking. Eventually, Murdoch was able to drive up Bonaventure Boulevard and find the bulldozer. He figured Andrew was dead, and he couldn't possibly have survived. But as he grabbed the back of the contractor's shirt to haul him out of his vehicle, Andrews twitched. Together they drove out of the decimated areas. All that was left, for as far as they could see, was ash. In all, the car fire killed 8 people, including Jeremy J.I. Stoke, Melody Bledsoe and her great-grandchildren Emily and James, Junior Roberts, and ruined more than 1,000 homes over 38 days. But as they drove out, all Don Anderson could think of was, how did anyone live through this? And there's a picture of Don Andrews with his wife, Deborah Andrews, nearly died in his bulldozer. And he's got some scars on his hands, and the area they're standing in front of is totally devastated. 5 easy memory tricks. This is the genius section. You know that eating healthy, staying active, and solving a few brain games can help keep you sharp. But these lesser-known habits work wonders, too. Sit tall. When we are sad or afraid, we naturally collapse or cower. Studies have shown that the converse is also true. When we slouch, this defeated position actually causes us to feel anxious or depressed, which makes it harder to think clearly and remember things. In a study of 105 college students, 56% found it easier to do math problems when they sat up straight than when they slumped down. Erect posture apparently improves memories because it boosts blood and oxygen flow to the brain by up to 40%, according to one estimate. Number 2, exercise once. Having trouble remembering faces? Break a sweat. In a small study, researchers at the University of Iowa showed pictures of faces to older folks, average age 67, on 2 different days and after 2 different kinds of workouts. On one day, they pedaled a stationary bike for 20 minutes at a pace that was intense enough to make them breathe heavily, but still be able to walk. Or talk. Hope they could still walk. On the other day, they simply sat for 20 minutes on a self-pedaling bike. On average, people remembered the faces better after the intense exercise. What's more, the memory gains after a single workout were similar to the game after 3 months of regular exercise. Number 3. Limit TV. Every parent and grandparent has heard that too much screen time can hurt a child's cognitive development. But what about those at the other end of their lifespan? To find out, researchers at the University College of London analyzed data from more than 3,500 participants in a long-term study who were aged 50 or older and did not have dementia at their initial assessment. Controlling for physical activity, health conditions, and demographic factors such as education, they found that people who watched more than 3.5 hours of TV a day for 6 years experienced a greater drop in verbal memory test scores, on average decrease of 8-10%, than those who watched less, an average decrease of 4.5%. On a related note, another study found that watching violent programs elevates stress hormones, which impairs memory. Number 4, doodle. Research at the University of Waterloo recruited a group of younger adults and a group of older adults and gave them a series of 30 words and asked them to either draw, write it, or write them out. After a short break, both groups were asked to recall as many words as they could. At both age groups, those who drew the words remembered the most. The effect was actually greater in the older adults. According to one of the study's authors, this happens because while some parts of the brains involved in memory retrieval deteriorate with age, the visual processing region actually usually don't. Hence, sketching can help adults of any age keep their memory as sharp as a college student's. That's interesting. Number 5, walk backwards. The next time you're trying to recall something, don't just think back, walk back. In a series of experiments, participants viewed a video of a stage crime, a word list, or a set of pictures. Then they imagined walking forward or backward, watched a video that stimulated forward or backward motion, or actually walked forward or backward. Some people also sat still. Backward motion, whether real, imagined, or watched, helped people remember the information better than sitting still and, in most instances, better than forward motion. It may be that moving backward in space mentally helps us move back in time to the moment we learn something. All in a day's work. I grew up above my father's tavern. When we were kids, we would reach each other down the stairs every morning to sweep up the bar and find the change because it was a drop during the night. Years later, as an adult, I found out that my father would throw a few coins over the bar for us to find in the morning. It cost him only $1 a day to have us fight to be the one first to clean the bar. Smart man. In his new memoir, Blowing the Bloody Doors Off, Michael Caine described a time he held a cab. After he got in and they drove off, he noticed the driver sizing him up in the rearview mirror. "Hey, I know you," he told the two-time Oscar winner. "I nodded encouragement," Caine writes. "I was hoping for something about how brilliant I'd been in Batman Begins. Instead, didn't you used to be Michael Caine?" As a kid, I always wondered why my mom never wore the macaroni necklace I made her to work. And now I'm a mom, and I'm like, oh, okay. Maybe don't do that. Planning on getting arrested anytime soon? On this Facebook page, West Virginia lawyer L. Scott Briscoe shares some tips on how to avoid that fate, based on the odd events he has witnessed in court. After pleading guilty to transferring and receiving stolen property, do not ask your judge whether he's interested in seeing the collection of ties you have for sale. When appearing in court, do not wear the same exact outfit and accessories you wore during your crime. Also, avoid security cameras. If you're running from the scene of your crime, the law will find you if you leave behind your wallet and your car, and your friends sitting in your car. When choosing a car to break in to steal the credit cards inside, please do not select the car belonging to the judge's wife. Oh, gosh. that'd be terrible. Do not plan your next felony over the payphone in your jail pod next to the sign that read, "All phones, calls are monitored and recorded." Calling a tow service to haul a broken-down ATV you are in the process of stealing creates a paper trail and a witness. Demanding a change of menu from the judge will not get you out of jail. And with that, let's switch over to Consumer Reports. Danger at the deli. Regularly eating even small amounts of cold cuts increases your risk of cancer and heart disease, and choosing uncured products won't help. Here's what you need to know. When you're looking for a healthy deli sandwich, you probably chose lean turkey over fatty salami. And if you're like close to half the deli meat eaters in a recent nationally represented CR survey of 1,000 people, you'd probably go for meat labeled no nitrates or nitrates added. But while turkey is among the leanest deli meats, in the big picture, it may not be healthier than other types. That's because all cold cuts are processed meats, like bacon and hot dogs. Regularly eating them, even amounts less than what you probably put in a sandwich, clearly increase the risk of cancer. They've also been linked to heart disease, stroke, and type 2 diabetes. And though avoiding nitrates and nitrites is a good idea, they're probably carcinogens, according to the World Health Organization. Choosing no nitrates, also labeled uncured meats, isn't any better. Why not? Thanks to the topsy-turvy world of government food labeling rules, no nitrates doesn't mean no nitrates, says Charlotte Valais, Senior Food and Nutrition Policy Analyst at Consumer Reports. Instead, it means that the nitrates and nitrites used to cure or preserve and flavor meat comes from celery or other natural sources, not synthetic ones, such as sodium nitrate or nitrite. To further confuse matters, their chemical composition is absolutely the same, and so are the health effects, says Joseph Sebergrant, Ph.D., Harrison Endowed Chair of Meat Science at Iowa State University. But don't uncured cold cuts at least have lower amounts of these compounds? Nope, according to CR's recent test at 31 deli meats. Products cured with nitrates and nitrites from natural sources had average levels of the chemicals that were similar to those cures with synthetic ones. And it didn't matter what type of meat it was, chicken, ham, roast beef, turkey, or salami. Nitrates and nitrites aren't the only problems with deli meats, either. Some contain coloring agents that may prove health risk. They're also often loaded with sodium. To top it off, cold cuts are prone to contamination with Listeria monocyclogenes, a potentially deadly type of bacteria. That's why CR looked not only at nitrate and nitrite levels, but also at sodium, listeria, and compound called 4-MEI, a potentially harmful byproduct of some caramel colors. Here's what we found and what you need to know about the deli meat to stay safe and healthy. The risk of nitrites. Nitrates and nitrites prevent bacterial growth and give deli meat its distinctive color and flavor. But there's a downside. Nitrates convert to nitrites, and when nitrites interact with protein, that creates compounds called nitrosamines, which may cause cancer. The North American Meat Institute, NAMI, an industry group, says that most nitrites in our diets come from vegetables. But there's little protein in vegetables, so their nitrates don't easily convert to nitrosamines, says Michael Hannon, Ph.D., a senior scientist at CR. It may also be that antioxidants or other compounds in vegetables prevent nitrites from becoming nitrosamines. Synthetic nitrites have been used since the 1920s to speed up curing process. But when health concern about them surfaced in the 60s, some manufacturers began processing meat without any nitrites. Those were gray, didn't hold flavor, and were susceptible to bacterial spoilage, Sebrank said. To alert consumers to those products, which are now rare, the Department of Agriculture required that they be labeled uncured. Then in the 1990s, companies developed new ways to cure the meats with celery or other natural nitrite sources. But the USDA decided that because the source of the compounds differed, meats made with them must be labeled uncured and no nitrates or nitrites added, Sebrink says, even though everyone in the meat industry realizes it's not technically correct. The uncured meats must also be labeled with a statement that clarifies that they have nitrates and nitrites from natural sources. That language is usually buried in fine print and doesn't explain that those compounds are chemically identical to the synthetic ones. Many meat processors believe that all deli meat should be labeled cured, no matter which curing process is used, according to NAMI. CR and the Center for Science and the Public Interest are using USDA to update its labeling rules. Uncured and natural nitrates, nitrites, make people think these meats are healthier, but they aren't, says CR's valets. USDA told CR that it's evaluating the effectiveness of vegetable-based curing agents and what may be required to change the current rules. What CR tests found? CR focused on nitrates and nitrites, but we also looked at 4-MEI, listeria, and sodium. Nitrates and nitrites. We tested 31 packaged deli meats, name brands and store brands, including chicken, ham, roast beef, salami, and turkey. All samples had levels below the federal government's threshold for deli meats, 500 micrograms per gram for nitrates and 200 micrograms for nitrite. But our test also showed how confusing the label can be. There were 10 cured meats in our test and at 21 uncured. On average, the nitrite and nitrite levels were essentially the same. 4-MEI. We tested 12 packaged deli meats with caramel color and ingredients lists for 4-MEI, a byproduct of caramel colors used in deli meats, colas, and other foods. Animal studies suggest that 4-MEI increases cancer risk, and in California, any food that exposes consumers to more than 29 micrograms per day must carry a cancer warning label. None of the meats we tested had more than that amount of 4-MEI in a 3-ounce serving, but some had high levels, up to 21 micrograms. So some deli meats could add a significant amount of 4-MEI to your diet, especially if you eat a lot of them or get to the compound from other sources, says Santa Mukhajid, Ph.D., manager of food safety testing at CR. Listeria monocytogenes. Cold cuts are known to be risky food for listeria, and meat sliced at deli counters are more likely to be contaminated than packaged ones. CR tested 133 samples of sliced meat purchased in New York City delis. Two of them contained the bacteria, one with a strain involved in an outbreak of illnesses linked to deli meat and cheese that put 8 people in the hospital. One person died. CR notified the New York City Department of Health and mental hygiene of our findings, and it addressed the issues. Listeriosis, the illness caused by listeria, is rare but serious. More than 90% of the people who get it are hospitalized, and 1 in 5 dies. The very old or young and people with compromised immune systems are more vulnerable. So are pregnant women, because the illness can cause miscarriage and stillbirth. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say that people in those high-risk groups should avoid deli meat entirely. Sodium. CR nutritionists reviewed the sodium in 124 packaged deli meats from a variety of brands and compared it with the sodium in similarly sized portions of fresh meat, such as grilled chicken. On average, deli meat had 8 to 11 times the sodium content. Too much sodium raises the risk of high blood pressure and heart disease. Experts advise keeping it under 2,300 milligrams a day. Cold cuts on the other cured meat and other cured meats are the fourth largest contributors of sodium in the U.S. diet, according to CDC. Cutting back on deli meat is an effective way to cut back on sodium, says CR nutritionist Amy Keating. The toll on public health. Processed meat can also contain other harmful substances. They include heterocyclic anamines and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, chemicals formed in meat cooked at high temperatures, and research suggests that too much of the iron found in beef and pork may enhance the conversion of nitrates to nitrosamines. It's the combined effect of those and other factors that make processed meat such a health hazard, says Fang Fang Zhang, well, that's an interesting name, associate professor at the Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy at Tufts University. Her research found that more than 14,500 new colorectal and other cancer cases in the U.S. annually could stem from processed meat. Other studies suggest a link between the meat and bladder and breast cancer. The World Health Organization, in fact, calls processed meat a known human carcinogen. It may also be responsible for almost 58,000 deaths from heart disease, stroke, and type 2 diabetes each year, according to a 2017 analysis in JAMA. Most Americans consume more than enough processed meat to pose risk. It doesn't take much. Harvard researchers found that increasing processed red meat intake by just half a serving a day, half an ounce of deli meat, half a hot dog, or one slice of bacon, raised the risk of dying over the next 8 years by 13%, according to a 2019 study in the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietitian. And on average, we eat about 6.5 ounces of processed meat each week, with deli meat as the top source. CR's recent survey found that almost half of Americans eat deli meat at least once a week. Among those with children under 12, 57% said their kids eat deli meat at least weekly. Must you give up deli meat? No, but you should sharply limit how much you eat. There's no known safe level of processed meat, Zhang says. Keating at CR suggests that when it comes to your lunch, think outside the box. Try sandwiches made with tomatoes and mozzarella, roasted or fresh vegetables with avocado or hummus, and nut butters with apples, berries, or bananas instead of jam. Egg salad, canned salmon, or light tuna can also be a good options. When you do opt for meat, choose fresh meat. Stick with small amounts, about 3 ounces of cooked turkey, chicken, or lean beef. What do deli meat labels really mean? And there's a picture of bologna slices in plastic packing. Uncured. These meats are almost always cured, but the curing agents are nitrates and nitrates derived from natural sources such as celery, not synthetic ones such as sodium nitrate. Organic. The meat must come from animals given organic feed and raised without antibiotics or added hormones. They may contain natural curing agents, but not synthetic ones, such as sodium nitrite. Caramel colorings that contain 4-MEI can't be used. Reduced sodium or lower in sodium. These terms don't mean low sodium, which is defined as 140 milligrams or less per serving. Rather, they mean that a food has at least 25% less sodium than a serving of a comparable product. The lowest sodium count in the meats in our test was 150 milligrams, but many had far more. Natural. Meats with this term is supposed to be minimally processed, but the Department of Agriculture's definition of that term doesn't clarify whether that includes the curing process. That omission allows manufacturers to use natural on deli meat labels, even though it's processed. Healthy. Meats with this claim have to be low in fat and saturated fat, and have no more than 400 milligrams of sodium per serving. but the claim doesn't take the other health risk of processed meat into consideration. No added hormones. This is a helpful term for deli meats made from beef, but it's misleading. For those made with poultry and pork, that's because cattle can be raised with added hormones, but poultry and pork cannot. So even poultry or pork products without a no hormone level don't have added hormones. And CR's deli meat test results. CR tested 31 packaged deli meats from 9 companies for nitrates and nitrites. 360 every day, Whole Foods, Applegate Farms, Boar's Head, Great Value, Walmart, Hillshire Farms, Hormel, Open Nature, Oscar Mayer, and Plumrose. On average, the levels were almost always the same for cured and uncured meats. And it shows here that nitrates per gram of meat, cured had 5 milligrams and uncured had 3 milligrams. For nitrites, cured had 12 milligrams and uncured had 9 milligrams. Sodium levels, cold cuts versus fresh cuts. CR's review of 2024 packaged deli meats found that deli meat contains an average of 8 to 11 times more sodium than a comparable type of fresh meat. Fresh cooked roast beef has, I guess it looks like about 100 milligrams. Packaged roast beef has almost 600 milligrams. Bologna has over 750. Fresh cooked chicken has about the same as beef. Packaged chicken breast is also above 750. Fresh cooked turkey breast has about maybe 120 milligrams. Packaged turkey breast has 760. Fresh cooked pork roast has about 100, the same as beef and chicken. Packaged ham, however, has nearly 900 milligrams. And a brief road report. Stay ahead of the curve with CR Auto Ratings news and advice. Ahead of the curve, defeating drowsy driving. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration estimates the drowsiness a factor in about 2.5% of automobile crashes. But a 2018 study by AAA Foundation for Highway Safety concluded that it could contribute to about 9% of accidents. Almost every major automaker offers some kind of driver monitoring system to detect fatigue or inattention. But we think Cadillac's Super Cruise hands-free driver assistant feature is the best system available today. Though the company says it's not designed to detect drowsy driving, the system uses a camera to make sure a driver's eyes are open. And looking at the road ahead, it would be even better if the camera were always on, not just when the vehicle's driver assistant feature is engaged. My car makes a sloshing sound turning corners. What could that be? Could it be booze? The most common cause is clogged drain trapping water in the heating and cooling system. The water formed by condensation usually empties into a ground, but a clogged drain can cause it to back up, leading to the steering sloshing around it and even dampness on the passenger side floor. I actually had that happen to me, and what it was a kinked hose. Most vehicles have several drain holes, including in the doors, trunk, and sunroof. When these become blocked, water can collect and cause damage, including corrosion. If the drains are clear, this cause be the engine cooling system, which should be checked by a professional. Recall of Honda and Acura. Honda is recalling 1.6 million Honda and Acura vehicles to the final phase of the Takata airbag recall. The airbags, which were reinstalled in 41.6 million vehicles from 10 manufacturers, are being replaced because faulty inflators can spray sharp metal fragments when the airbag deploys, causing injury or death. What to do? Honda will replace the airbag inflators at no cost and provide a free loaner call while the work is being done. For information, go to HondaAirbagInfo.com or call 888-234-2138. The vital statistic, 23.2 million. Number of Volkswagen Beetles produced between 1945 and 2019, before the last model rolled off the assembly line in mid-July. No more Beetles. CR first evaluated the bug in 1951. Noticed that the $1,280 model cruised nicely but lacked power and a gas gauge. What does this icon mean? And it shows it looks like a shoe in a circle. No white shoes after Labor Day? Brake shoe needs attention? Your shoe may be stuck under the floor mat. Depress the brake to start the car. Joking aside, this symbol appears in cars with a push-button ignition. It's meant to remind drivers that they need to press the brake pedal to start the car, then shift into the whichever gear they want. I actually have one of those on my car. And here we have a letter from the president and CEO of Consumer Reports. What's in your water? Most of us tend to take for granted that we can access a safe glass of drinking water simply by turning on our kitchen tap. But for many Americans, whether by choice or due to health concerns, bottled water has become an ubiquitous household item. This month, we're diving into the data and perception about drinking water to help you understand whether or not purchasing bottles is always a better option. Our nation's aging water infrastructure, a lack of running water in some communities, and high-profile water crises like those in Flint, Michigan and Newark, New Jersey, my hometown, mean that for some consumers, deciding between the faucet and bottles might not feel like a choice at all. But many of us who do have easy access to safe drinking water are nevertheless opting for bottles in the tune of $31 billion in 2018. Both for individuals and for society at large, it's worth asking whether all that spending and all that plastic are worthwhile. This month, we report on the integrity of our public water supply, share the water sources used by major bottled water companies, you may be surprised, as well as the findings of our national survey about consumer attitudes and behaviors. We also look at the big picture, talking to experts about what needs to be done in the short term to ensure that every community can access safe drinking water, as well as what sustainable solutions there are for the long term. Nearly 50 years ago, CR's reporting on failure of water purification systems in the face of rising pollution helped spark new consumer protections, including the Safe Drinking Water Act of 1974. As bottled water reaches new heights in popularity, the need for reliable information about drinking water is important as ever, which is why we're going back to the well to get you the answers you need today. Preventing hot car deaths. What's at stake? 53 children died in hot cars last year, the highest number of vehicle heat stroke deaths in 21 years, according to NoHeatStroke.org, and this year's grim count had reached 38 as of September 3rd. Some parents and caregivers unknowingly leave children in cars just for a minute, not realizing how quickly the temperatures can rise inside a closed vehicle, even in mild weather. A recent CR test conducted when it was 61 degrees Fahrenheit, example, measured the temperature inside a closed car at more than 105 degrees Fahrenheit after just an hour. And while it may be hard to imagine, many deaths have occurred when responsible parents unknowingly left their children in the back seat. Stress, lack of sleep, or even a change in routine can lead to such a tragedy. How CR has your back. Several automakers are installing safety features in new cars to help prevent child heat stroke, an innovation that CR has encouraged. Hyundai says a rear seat occupant alert system, currently on two of its models and one Kia model, will become standard on most of its new vehicles by 2022. It uses a door logic approach. If the rear door is opened and closed before or during a trip, the driver will later get a visual warning on the dashboard and an audible alert when the car is turned off. A motion sensing system will be offered as an option on certain models. Meanwhile, other car makers, including General Motors and Nissan, have also made or said they will make door logic rear seat reminder systems standard on more vehicles. CR is also pushing Congress to pass the Bipartisan Hard Car Act, which will require these systems on all new cars. Putting a stop to robocalls. What's at stake? The daily harassment from robocalls has reached epidemic proportions, but some relief may finally be in sight. An estimated 48 billion automated calls were placed on U.S. phones in 2018 alone. Those incessant calls aren't just an annoyance. Many are made by criminals trying to trick people into giving away sensitive personal information or to defraud them out of money. How CR has your back. CR advocates have long fought to protect consumers from robocalls, and we met repeatedly with telecom executives, tech experts, and legislature on Capitol Hill to seek solutions and demand action by Congress. And in July, we delivered some 230,000 petition signatures to the Federal Communications Commission calling for new standards to require phone companies to implement free, effective tools to stop robocalls. Later that same month, the U.S. House of Representatives voted 429-3 for a bill designed to curb abusive robocalling with new consumer protection. The Senate has approved its own anti-robocall bill in May. CR supports both bills, and the present time is working with key lawmakers of both parties to include the stronger parts of each in the final measure for Congress to pass and President Donald Trump to sign into law. What you can do for the latest updates and tips on guarding against runaway robocalls, go to cr.org/robocalls1119. Raising safety standards. What's at stake? For many consumer products present unnecessary dangers to the people who use them unnecessary because many of the risks could be eliminated through safer designs and stronger regulation. One example, a 2019 CR investigation, linked dozens of infant fatalities to use of infant incline sleepers, which are designed to put babies to sleep on an incline of between 10 and 30 degrees. Even though the American Academy of Pediatrics has determined that they increase the risk of airway compression, suffocation, and death. Another example, a child dies on average of once every 2 weeks when a TV or a piece of furniture tips over on him. Even though CR tests have found that manufacturers can design safer and more stable dressers at a range of prices. How CR has your back. In July, a U.S. House committee approved in a bipartisan vote a group of CR-endorsed bills that will help protect families from these and other dangerous products. In addition to banning the sale of infant incline sleep products and requiring mandatory standards for dresser stability, the raft of measures included bills to prohibit the sale of crib bumper pads, a prohibition CR has long sought, citing suffocation risk, improve the safety of portable fuel containers, and promote the use of carbon monoxide detectors. CR is working to get these bills approved by the full House and Senate and signed by the President. What you can do, go to cr.org/safety1119 to ask your House member to support legislation banning inclined sleepers and crib bumper pads and to pass tougher safety measures for dressers to prevent tip-over deaths. Now let's look at some letters. Our September 2019 article, Cable Wants You Back, offered smart ways to build your viewing experience you want for less, with or without cable. Our readers sound off on their strategies. To join in, go to cr.org/TV1119. My local cable company, Comcast, has been the utility I have loved to hate for many years. Every 2 years, I lock in a rate and prepare to do battle with account reps by listing how much I could save by piecing together services from other providers. This year, customer service stopped me mid-sentence and informed me that my monthly payment was going down. Not only that, but Comcast would add Netflix free of charge. Prior to renewal, Comcast sold us a new iPad for $200. Perhaps Comcast is finally starting to get it. A few months ago, I purchased for $30 one of the antennas you recommended. I'm getting around 60 channels, a lot of which are in HD, giving me excellent picture. While I'm not ready to cut the cord completely, I was pleasantly surprised because I didn't need another cable box to add to my already outrageous cable bill. Thanks for the information. Fairlawn, New Jersey. The cable companies make great introductory offers after the first year is up. You better hold on to your hat or your wallet because your rates will skyrocket. They show zero interest in maintaining customers who have been using their service for years. They refuse to offer discounts or benefits unless customers cancel the service, wait, and then sign up again. That's Cynthia Matthews from Raleigh, North Carolina. A few news items have said that because of the loss of customers, there are more ads on cable. One of the two reasons we left cable was the length and stupidity, if I may, of the ads. The price is an issue, certainly, but the ads were such a drag. Key issue, picture quality, which relates to the degree of video compression used by the provider, not the nominal resolution. Video providers almost always digitally compress videos to save bandwidth. The problem with compression is that it reduces detail, color depth, and video dynamic. At its worst, it renders even the best source material as unwatchable cartoon-like images. Editor's note, both the content creator and the service distribute the signal that can compress content, and there are a variety of other factors that contribute to picture quality, too. With streaming, the picture quality can vary based on the speed and reliability of your broadband. And if you connect your TV and or streaming player via Wi-Fi, the performance of your wireless router can also have an impact on the quality of the picture. Cable may also compress signals, but over-the-air reception via antenna can be less compressed than cable, so you may get a better picture. Where I save a lot of money streaming is by using my service PlayStation View in my two homes. I got rid of two cable providers and replaced them with a single streaming service, plus I was a Netflix and Prime subscriber while I was a cable customer, saving over $1,000 a year between my two homes. We prefer to record everything and fast-forward everything through the commercials. We mainly watch local channels, so I need a system with a DVR and a program of shows so that I can program recordings. Do you have a recommendation? Thanks so much for your work. If you get your local channels from a streaming service, many offer cloud DVRs for recording shows. though sometimes you can't fast-forward forward through the commercials. If you're using an antenna, there are several DVRs that let you record over-the-air programs. In fact, we'll be testing 5 or 6 of these systems, such as Amazon Fire TV Recast and TiVo Bolt OTA this fall. Stay tuned for our report. The virtue for me with respect to streaming is that I know my money is not going to the sports channels that I have no interest in. If only cable would separate out the very high-cost sports channels from other channels, it would reduce the cost of cable for many of us. This is editor's note. Many of the cable streaming services, such as AT&T TV, now on Hulu Live TV, also include sports channels such as ESPN. In general, subscription rates for these services have been rising. But others such as Philo TV, $20 a month, are able to offer low-price services that don't include sports channels. With others, you may have option of adding sports channels or not. That's not always an option with cable plans. You report that cable companies are imposing new fees for broadcast TV and regional sports. These networks are raising their fees to all distributors of their content, not just cable. Retransmission fees are tripping in many markets. It's only a matter of time that any streaming service that carries those networks will also raise their rates to cover their cost of this content. If you will, see that most of those streaming services do not carry local broadcast networks or sports channels to keep their monthly rates low. Editor's note, we are aware that cable companies and others have real costs associated with programming they offer, and those costs are rising. What we're opposed to, though, is the practice of conceding the real total cost of service for consumers by promoting lower advertising fees, then tucking on additional fees, such as a broadcast, TV, and regional sports charge, that aren't properly disclosed, that were disclosed in fine print. We're asking companies to be more transparent about the total cost of subscribing to a service so that consumers can make more informed decisions. A quickie here before we close. Words are their own opposite. A contronym is a word that its own antonym. Sound unusual? You probably use contronyms every day. Oversight can mean both watchful supervision and an inadvertent omission. Left means both departed and remaining. Dust can mean to add dust to crops or to remove dust from furniture. Cleave means either to cling, adhere, or to split and sever. Off means both deactivated, turn that off, and activated, the alarm went off. And with that, we've run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.